Well, it's a big tech story with a very Irish twist. Stripe, the fintech company, is reportedly arranging a tender offer that would value it at around $140 billion. Yeah, I'm just going to say that again. That's $140 billion, four times the value of Ryanair, just to give you a little comparison. It is a massive figure for a company that still hasn't gone public, and it's reignited interest in Stripe, its young founders, and Ireland's role in global tech. And when I mean young founders, I'm talking about two lads, two smart young lads from rural Ireland who in 2010 founded this company. They were aged 19 and 21. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and today we are exploring who Stripe really is, what this valuation means, how the Collison brothers, John and Patrick, built it. These are two Tipperary boys with, I think it's fair to say, a prodigious interest in science and technology, who turned teenage interests and teenage hobbies into businesses and became multi-billionaires. Oh, and just let you know, they were millionaires as teenagers, but more on that later. Well, joining me now to explore their fascinating story is Charlie Taylor, the technology and innovation editor at the Business Post. Charlie, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Great to be here, thanks.
It's one of those stories that really makes you rethink your life choices, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. You want to go home and kind of go, is it too late to retrain?
never too late. But I think the story of Stripe says to me, you know what? You sort of need to be interested in computer, in science, and maybe be a bit of a prodigy at around 8 years of age.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the story of the boys, I mean, they were brought up in Dromahaire, which, you know, a teeny speck on the map, if you like, you know, in Tipperary, very close to Limerick City. They were brought up in an area that was so rural, they didn't have broadband. In the end, they managed to petition their parents to get satellite broadband. So this was early on. They were obviously technically focused from a very early age. Patrick went on to win the Young Scientists exhibition that we all know and love at the ripe old age of 16. And he and his brother John, who also took part in the Young Scientists exhibition, were millionaires by the age of 19 and 17, respectively, when they sold their first company, Automatic, for $5 million. And that was before they even come up with the idea of Stripe. So, I mean, you can see, like, from the get-go, they were going places.
Okay, I have two young children, so I need to figure out what the, I suppose, trajectory was for those young children that made them millionaires in their teenage years. They were born to a mum and dad, right? Lily, who's a microbiologist, yeah, and Dennis, who's an electronic engineer. So they both had these scientific backgrounds. Yeah. Yeah. But interestingly, the parents were both entrepreneurs as well.
That's right, yeah. And I think that really sort of endeared in them this kind of idea of, like, getting out there and there's, you know, that things can be sold. If you have that sort of mindset of kind of going, you know, how do you figure this thing out? I don't think, you know, I've met the guys a few times, and in any of those periods when I've seen them, I don't think they're motivated by money. Now, that's easy to say for, you know, when you look at someone who is a millionaire at 17 and a billionaire just a few years later, of like, eh, money's not that important, you know, because of course it doesn't, you know, not something you have to worry about. But I do get that sense that money has never been the motivating factor for them, even though obviously it brings them a lot of nice things and all the rest. And I do think it is that sort of, I suppose, that questioning factor that they have of, like, how do you make this thing work? Because if you look at, you know, most people kind of go, what is Stripe? And a good question, you know, and it's a good question to ask, because it's like people just kind of go, it's a payments company. And you're like, what does that mean? But what they did basically prior to them, the whole idea was, like, if you wanted to do online payments, you had to usually work it out through the banks. And this was a process, you know, dealing with banks now is no easier than it was then, if more so, it was probably even more difficult then. And this is a process that would take weeks and months. And their idea with Stripe was you would basically present six line of code that you could give to developers rather than to the financial people. You gave it to the developers who were building the software and kind of go, there you go, put that into your script on your website and you can take payments. Incredible. Like, when you think about it, so simple. It was just like, here you go, six lines of code, just insert it, off you go. And that was how they started, you know, and straight away there was interest in them. Peter Thiel, you know, and Elon Musk, who hardly need introduction, they invested in them straight from the bat. They were like, these guys have huge potential. here you go. And that was just the starting point for them. Now you look at them and they are covering everything. If you want to deal with tax, billing, all of those things are covered by Stripe. It's built it out into this huge suite. And so while payments is still the primary business offering, if you like, they have gone way beyond that.
Okay, I want to just go back, I suppose, to their early years, to their childhood and where their interest, I suppose, in initially computers came from. It sounds, from everything I've read from all my research, that they did grow up in this environment that fostered this intellectual curiosity and that their parents really supported their interests. There seemed to be a house where there was a lot of conversation, where there was a lot of reading.
Tons of reading. You know, you get the sense, the idea that there was this, you know, it, like the visit to the library was a treat early on. And that was something that they loved, you know, dived into books. You still see Patrick often reports on, you know, on X rather than, you know, which was Twitter, you know, on here's what I've been reading the last while. And it can be everything. It would be, you know, there'll be a few literary choices as well as like these incredibly complex that even the title kind of makes you kind of go, Jesus, I don't know what that means, you know.
So yeah, I heard a great story of him sort of being seen sitting at the kitchen table having his dinner, reading a book, out walking his dog. Actually holding a physical book in his hand and reading as he goes. So it just gives you a sense, I suppose, of their appetite for thirst for knowledge. There's a great story about Patrick when he was a young boy making his first Holy Communion. And one of the gifts that he got was a computer game. And this seems to have sparked an interest in him.
Yes, absolutely. I think that kind of got them on the go of like, you know, all the reading and stuff they had done before. There was something like they could focus with that of like, here was something they could already start making attained with. So even, you know, that bled into the project that Patrick did, which on the Young Scientist exhibition, which was basically creating a new language for computer, which is incredible, you know. And then, you know, that moved on to obviously the first company they had, Automatic, you know. Automatic. So
yeah, it's a kind of a tricky name.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I had read reports, okay, that he presented this project at the Young Scientist, right? As you say, it was this new language, right? And that the judges on the day were aghast.
Absolutely.
That they literally could not believe that somebody who was so young, who had taken a programming course, a computer programming course, I think at the age of 8 and had done another computer programming course at the age of 10, but had understood programming language to such extent that they could create their own language. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I remember I didn't report on it, but I was in the Irish Times working there at the time, you know, so it would have been early on in my career. And I remember them, you know, our reporting of it was like, it was almost like, how do you explain what it is he's come up with in an accessible way that the general reader is going to want to know? Because everyone loves to hear about the winning entry for the Young Scientist. And it was really kind of like, and you could see even then it was like, God almighty, this kid is going to do amazing things. Now, no one knew what he was going to do. And even, you know, when you read back and you read his, you know, what he said around the time of the win, it was kind of like, oh, shucks, I've won a few quid and I don't know what I'll spend that on. And it sounds almost like a young person who's won a competition and has no idea what they'll do in the world, which is fair enough. But I mean, within 3 years from that, he had sold his first company for $5 million.
Okay, so he was just 16 years of age when he won that program, right? His brother, which I think is really interesting, his younger brother, who now is obviously with him, John, he was 2 years younger. He got the highest scores ever recorded in the Irish school leaving certificate for that year. Yeah. Okay, so I think we call that brains to burn in the family. Right, so John's now 15, Patrick is 17, and they launched this first startup, this Octomatic, and they were playing on eBay themselves. And they were looking at all of these sellers on eBay and saying, how are these sellers, these tiny small businesses, how are they tracking their sales? How are they managing to understand what's happening on their own little platforms? Oh, I know. Let's see if we can create some technology for them.
That's it. Basically, inventory management, you know, to help people kind of manage their sales process easier. You know, and that's the whole thing, I think. And that's one thing that they really demonstrate time and time again about the entrepreneurial mindset is not necessarily being the first person to spot this, but kind of going, how do I put that into action? So people knew, you know, PayPal was already in existence and doing well. But, you know, what the guys did, you know, later on with Stripe, but also, you know, you saw that early insight into their thinking was they spot the gap. And they kind of go, there's a gap here. And then the question is, are we the people that go and fix that? Or do we just talk about it and someone else comes along and does that? And they obviously had that entrepreneurial mindset, which was like, well, we're the guys to fix this, you know?
And they did. And they sold it to a Canadian company for $5
million. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. Then they both decided to go to college. Mm. I personally don't think they needed college. I think that's what I'm getting from, you know, selling your first company for $5 million at 15, 17 years of age.
Well, they're probably in retirement mode. Do you know what I mean? A couple of years, like studying.
Ah, someday it'll happen for us. So Patrick then, I think, went to MIT to Massachusetts, and John was at Harvard. Yeah. But they dropped out because they saw their second opening in the market.
And that sort of classic tech bro, you know, college dropout is you know, there's a romance to it of like, we went to Harvard and MIT and all these great universities. And then we kind of go, we've got a better idea to make some money. This is all very lovely, but we want to be out there in the real world. So, you know, very quickly dropped out of college and they started off with Stripe. And, you know, as I say, it gained traction incredibly well. I mean, they already had a reputation because obviously they had sold this company. They had drawn attention. Young scientists had created a lot of interest in them, just not just in Ireland, but globally. And I think then they proved their mettle. They proved that they could do this with the first company they set up. And then so when they started the raise for Stripe, which is 2010, so it's still a relatively young company. You know, if you think about it, 16 years old, like, you know, which a baby really in the scale of things. They, you know, they had plenty, you know, all of, you know, the Silicon Brothers top brass wanted to be part of it.
So what they were able to see then were all of these startups, all of these businesses on the internet, all of these customers who want to give these businesses money, but want to do it in a really simple fashion. And it was really complicated. And they thought, we can simplify this.
Yeah. And as I say, six lines of code. I mean, you know, and even it sounds almost too simple when you say it like that. That was literally what they came up with. Six lines of code. And it's like, off you go. But giving it to the developers was the key thing. The guys who were building the technology, the building the websites, just changed everything. Because suddenly, like, companies that were like, oh, we want to sell. We see there's the demand there, but we just can't get this going because the complexity involved in this. And I think they've brought that sort of great thinking into every product they've launched, because they've kind of gone, how do we make this easier for sellers, you know, for people that want to do business online, you know? And I think it's really their mission is, we want to grow the GDP of the internet, which is a bit sort of like, what the hell does that mean? But you know, the thing is, and I remember sitting down with John Monson, he said that, you know, of like, we're only just getting started. This was 10 years ago, maybe. And even then there was the sort of like, when are you going to IPO? When are you going to IPO? Everyone wants to see him go public. But he was like, we're not in any rush here. It's really early days. He was saying, we want to grow the GDP of the internet, which means basically we think, because we're all doing online banking, because we're paying, you know, much of our world now is online. You know, we don't even, you know, we use our phones for all payments. You know, most of us don't even carry cash, but you know, we're the exception. If you look at that on a global level, the amount of online business is still extremely low compared to business as a whole globally. It's still a fraction of that. And even then they were kind of going, we, you know, we're only at the start of this. We want to keep going with this, you know, and it's early days. And they still have that attitude now, which I think is really impressive.
Yeah, I was watching a video last night on YouTube with Patrick Collison, still so young, talking about the idea of Stripe. And this was maybe 2 or 3 years after it launched. And he said, we just wanted something super simple for people to grow a business on the web. Okay. And that's their thing, time and time again, simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. And then he said, which I thought was really, really funny, he said that they didn't do any marketing at all in the first couple of years. There was no massive push. They thought, you know, word of mouth will be enough if the product is good.
And it's true. And particularly in tech, that's how it works. Do you know, I mean, there's a lot of products like the tech guys start using it. And one company, they'll say it to their pals and they start using it. And management often doesn't know. There's another company, Teamwork, down in Cork. And they once got a call from someone in Disney kind of going, what the hell's going on? Who are you guys? And they're like, what? And it was because lots of the techies in Disney were using Teamwork without having told their bosses or whatever. And there was suddenly like the billing come through and it was like, who are you guys? You know, and like, that's because they had just been recommended. So the techies took them on. And that was very much the Stripe story times a gazillion, because like the techies kind of took it on the development side. And that's how it spread. And it was mainly tech companies that that were their early customers, and since then they moved into the Amazons, the Hertz's, you know, all the household names we know way beyond tech.
So they knew themselves that if the product was good enough, word of mouth would be enough.
Yeah.
And that then they would be able to sort of launch on this global scale once they had a really strong foundation. Yeah.
And they still have that. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, even in terms of publicity-wise, you don't see them rolling out big ads or anything like a lot of tech companies or a lot of companies anywhere doing. They don't, you know, I mean, they're quite mean, if you like, in terms of PR side of things. They don't, you know, they're not whining and dining journalists or any of those things. It's very much like, here's our product, the market will take it on, and that's all we need to do.
Here's one phrase: even turkeys can fly in high winds.
Yeah.
I thought that was brilliant. Now, it took me about a minute to get it. I thought, oh, I see what
I've never heard that. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's one of us. He'd read it in a book and he thought, yeah, I'm going to apply that to my own business, you know. So they did not launch a turkey. Did they face any difficulties, any challenge, any real competition? As you say, PayPal was already there and a few other companies.
Yeah, there's absolutely, they do have competition, but, they still have competition now. It's an ongoing thing and everyone wants to be in the payment space. But what I think is impressive about them, and what I think investors find impressive about them, which is obviously more important, is that there's a resilience there. But there is also a kind of very close eye on what's happening and moving into that space, you know. So they've broadened what they do in terms of the suite of offerings they have way beyond just doing payments processing. You know, as I said, they're doing tax billing, all of these things. But also, you know, I mean, part of the reason why they've got that huge swing in valuation of late, because they did sink down. They had problems a few years ago. After COVID, every tech company and companies even beyond tech overhired. Mm-hmm. As I think Patrick said, they announced job cuts and they said we were overly optimistic. Every company overhired because they were like, there was this big swing after COVID where everyone was like, oh my God, I want to spend money, you know. So they had to cut back then. Their valuation fell to 50 billion. It had been, the high before that was 95 billion when the Ireland Strategic Investment Fund, which is sort of Ireland's, you know, pension fund, if you like, you know, our rainy day fund, had backed them in 2021 as part of that raise, and they went to a record 95 billion at that point. But then it slumped down to 50 billion, which was in 2022-23, I think it was. And that was due, like, a lot of sentiment against tech went, you know, negative, and all those raises that were doing, you know, valuations that were extremely high just disappeared overnight. You know, and lots of tech companies cut roles. But I think, as I say, what I think was really interesting is how they pay attention to the market. They had always kept an eye on crypto, had been, you know, and had allowed payments on crypto early on. They sort of stepped away from it when it went crazy. They've stepped back into it in terms of stable coins, which I don't know if you know, but it's sort of like a form of cryptocurrency, but it's linked to stable currencies such as the dollar, which means it's less fluctuation. So it's kind of seen almost like as a safe way to introduce crypto, if you like, and it's something that's going to gain momentum. It's, you know, as we go on, particularly with what's going on in the States. But they also, they appealed very early on to AI companies as well. So something like 78% of the top 50 AI companies, including everyone you can think of, the OpenAIs, the Anthropics, all of those companies, went on to Stripe's platform really early on. So between those two, you know, it's like they're riding two horses into the future, if you like. And that is a massive opportunity for them. So that's part of the reason for this big upswing again, of like that they've doubled valuation over a couple of years after dipping, because they are there very much a leading player as we go into the future.
Talk to me about a tender offer. I mean, what does that actually mean? Why do that?
Yeah, because people get confused because, you know, as I've said, Stripe has resisted going public. So usually with a public company, you know, you can buy shares in them. Now that doesn't happen because it's still private. What it has done is, because they've got employees that have been there for a long, long time, at some point, employees are waiting to get rewarded for their shares. And because they haven't gone private, what they've tended to do is do these offers, which is basically you selling your shares privately to some big firms, investment firms. So it's a way of like being able to reward employees who have been there for a long, long time, and maybe some investors that want to get out at this stage, by selling the shares privately rather than on the public market. So they've done that a number of times. And this latest valuation, the 140 billion, is based on one of those as well. And it's interesting because they've even set a trend in regard to that, I think, because Revolut followed and did something very similarly recently. And I think you're finding a few companies doing that. So even the fact of like, they are unusual. They've had pressure from the word go to like, when are you going to go public? Everyone wants to see you go on the stock market. They've resisted time and time again. And this latest offering shows they are in no rush to do it still. And that other companies are following in their footsteps and kind of going, actually, we don't need to list. Because if you list, then every 3 months when it's the quarterly results, you've got to impress investors. And if you don't, it means your shares are going to dip. And, you know, it stops you being able to do really long-term work because you're continually at the beck and call of like, what do we do to keep investors happy?
And it also sounds like they have a belief that there's still a huge journey to go on.
That's it. As I said, you know, when I spoke to John, you know, 10 years ago for an interview, he was like, we're still at an early stage. You hear him now and he still says, we're at a very early stage. We're only just beginning, you know, which I think is fascinating.
And they are everywhere now.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, you might not know you're using Stripe, but I can almost guarantee you have used
Absolutely.
Stripe. Give me a sense of where they operate and where their bases are.
Yeah, well, they started off in San Francisco, you know, I mean, and it was interesting because it was at a time when it felt as though if you were an Irish tech company, you had to go to Silicon Valley to build. You know, I mean, that argument is over, I would say, to an extent. You know, companies have shown in the wake of Stripe that you can build in Ireland. Now, a lot of them still go to Silicon Valley because it's easier money. But like Stripe themselves have kind of given back in many ways as well. They became dual headquartered. So they're now headquartered both in San Francisco and in Dublin. They've given back a lot in that regard. I think they have, you know, offices and development centers and R&D scattered around the world as they keep growing. But they've got a sizable presence in Dublin. They've also given back in many other ways as well. There's the immersive software engineering course in Limerick, which is a fantastic course that young people are doing in terms of becoming developers, which gets you straight away, rather than being stuck in a classroom, you're there working with Stripe, Intercom, whatever tech company, Intel, all of these companies at the heart of the engineering team. There's no sort of like, here's the young guy, get him to do filing. You know, it's like, you are in there. That's the sort of course they're doing, which is a great course. And that's arguably the way software development should be taught, you know, whereas I get out there and do the work. They have, you know, they become sponsors of the Young Scientists, which is really interesting because it's 20 years ago this year since Patrick won it. And it's a good kind of like, I suppose, rounding out the circle.
Lovely full circle moments.
And obviously then there's been, you know, John in particular has been sort of invested in, you know, buying up properties, you know, like listed houses, like actually I'm not sure if it's listed, but it's a very old house, Happy Leaks house. Wes, he's gone in as an investor with the Western Aerodrome as well, which they're looking to rebuild. So, you know, there is a sort of giving back here locally as well.
And they've brought an absolutely knockout gaff on Aylesbury Road for the folks. Knock yourself out.
We all need a little pad, don't we? You know, but I do think, you know, it is funny because they, you know, in some ways they are very tech bro. You know, I mean, they do, you know, John Collison sometimes flies from San Francisco himself, you know, in his own plane to Ireland, you know. So, I mean, in a way they're in like such a different world to the way we are. But at the same time, I remember interviewing once and we sat outside a cafe in Sandymount, looking over at the green, and we're there. And at the end of it, you know, just sat there. And you know, normally when you would, if you were interviewing Mark Zuckerberg or any Elon Musk or whoever it would be, there would be a cast of thousands there watching every word that was being said and saying, "Actually, that's off the record. That's off the record." None of that. You know, he spoke just for an hour. We chatted about Stripe and ambitions and all of this stuff. And then afterwards, he put on his bicycle helmet and cycled off. And yeah, kind of going, there's a billionaire on the road to Sandymount. Hope drivers are taking careful. Yeah. Now, in fairness, it was a really lovely bike.
Finally, do we know anything else about them personally, about their lives?
Yeah, I mean, they keep themselves to themselves. If you meet them, they are personable, but they are also, you know, they don't reveal too much about themselves. I think they're very private. Patrick got married a few years ago, and even when, you know, he announced that he was getting married on what was then Twitter and announced it in a nerdy kind of, you know, our metrics are up, we're doubling our team or whatever, something like that, that all the tech bros kind of giggled at and went, you big nerd, you know.
Do you know what I love about the person that he married? Right, she's Swiss-American biochemist. Her name is Silvana Connerman, right? And the year that he won the Young Scientist here in Dublin, he obviously went to the final around Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
He came second and she came first. Yeah. And that's how they met.
Amazing. So I like the fact that he's kind of like the, you know, playing catch up still. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure.
And John, we believe, is engaged. But again, we don't know a huge amount about their lives.
Very, very quiet about their private lives. You know, even that was seen as a surprise that Patrick revealed all. And I'm sure it was just to shut people up before they kind of went snooping. And, you know, and I think with John as well, he's kept his life very private, you know, keeps himself to himself. And I think that's the way they intend to continue things. You're not going to see them on the cover of Hello magazine anytime soon, I think.
Oh, well, Charlie Taylor, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk Daily. It's an absolutely fascinating story, isn't it? I am definitely booking my eldest child into some programming, some coding course.
The one in Limerick that they're behind, I think that's the one to go.
Yeah, I'm going to let her know her future sorted. Mama's got it sorted for you.